motivation, avoid criticism or rejection, gain acceptance, be important, and thereby overcome our own inner feelings of worthlessness. Unfortunately, the feelings that are aroused in the other person are often those of envy, competitiveness, or even hatred, and easy exploitation. If we look at pride, we see that it's often a substitute for genuine self-esteem. It is also of considerable interest to realize that the major relationship to which many people apply these phenomena is the relationship to God. There is the belief, often unconscious, that we can elicit a certain response from God. God will feel sorry for me. God will retaliate against me. God will punish me. God will be pleased with me. God will favor me. When we have adequate self-esteem, we are motivated by inner humility and gratitude, and therefore, we have no need for the constant eliciting of strokes and pats from others, or God. When we stop wanting to be liked, we find that we are. When we stop catering to others and trying to manipulate their approval, we find that they do respect us. Self-denigration, in the forms of placating, flattering, deference, self-effacement, and passivity, are all attempts to influence others by catering to their ego, so as to get favorable treatment and get our own way. False humility merely says to the other person, "I am a small person. Please treat me that way." And of course, they promptly do. As is quite apparent, all of the above emotions are manipulative of the other person and destructive of real relationship. They all diminish our self-esteem, for they are all positions of vulnerability. Thus, although we may think that we feel well and secure at the level of pride, that pride is always accompanied by defensiveness due to its basic vulnerability. We puff up with pride whenever we feel insecure. The inflation of pride is easily susceptible to the puncture of a passing remark or raised eyebrow. The human condition. All of the negative feelings are essentially forms of fear. Fear of loss of esteem by ourselves or others, or fear of not surviving and a loss of security. Because most of the negative feelings are accompanied by a negative value judgment, they are suppressed, repressed, or projected. Suppression, repression, and projection are all destructive dynamics and result in a progressive stress on and decline of our relationships. We like to pretend that our innermost feelings are unknown to others. But are they? We are all connected to each other on the psychic, intuitive level, so our feelings are read and known by others. We may not be consciously aware of it, but their behavior toward us reveals that they know our inner attitude and feelings toward them. For example, let's say that our external behavior on the job is exemplary. Why is it, we ask, that the other person gets the promotion or the recognition and we do not? The answer is to look at our hidden inner feelings about the boss and the job. Do we really think that he hasn't registered our inner envy, criticalness, and resentment? It is a safe bet to assume that others know our inner feelings and the thoughts that go with those feelings. The kind of thoughts we are having about them is very likely matched with similar thoughts they are having about us. If we realize this principle, a lot of things that happen in our life will start to make sense. We can ask ourselves, how would I react if I were the other person and knew exactly what my personal inner feelings and thoughts really were? The answer to that will usually make clear what the other person's behavior is all about. Perhaps we didn't get the promotion because, at the unspoken, energetic level, our boss knew that we were critical of him, resentful of our colleagues, and clamoring for approval and recognition. Before searching ourselves for negative feelings, it is best to remember that these feelings are not our real inner self. They are learned programs we have inherited from being humans. Nobody is exempt from them. Everyone, from the highest to the lowest, has, or has had, an ego. Even the few who are enlightened had an ego at one time, before it was finally transcended. This is the human condition. To be able to observe our feelings honestly requires a non-judgmental attitude. We first have to be aware of what is really going on inside of us before we can do anything about it. As we let go of a feeling, it is replaced by a higher one. The only purpose for recognizing and admitting a feeling is so that we can relinquish it. To be surrendered means that we are willing to relinquish a feeling by allowing ourselves just to experience it and not to change it. Resistance is what keeps it there in the first place. We may think that some of the negative emotions are necessary to us. However, upon examination, we will discover that this is an illusion. The higher emotions are far more powerful and effective in bringing about the fulfillment of our needs. Let's ask ourselves, for example, what would we be willing to do for someone we really, truly love? We will instantly see that it is almost anything. There is almost no limit to which we will go for love. Now, contrast this with what we are willing to do for someone who has intimidated us. We will see that we grudgingly give as little as possible. While the intimidators may seem to get away with something temporarily on the surface, they really have lost the whole thing, haven't they? Their victory is superficial, temporary, and not even real. A victory in appearance only. In the end, the world turns, and the intimidators sow their own destruction. What we win by the negative emotion is short-lived and inauthentic. It doesn't really satisfy. It's like a forced compliment. Real happiness results from a win-win situation. The price of a win-lose situation is hatred and low self-esteem. Underneath it all, we fool neither ourselves nor others. Others always know when we are out to exploit them. If we have difficulty in relinquishing a feeling, it helps merely to look at the intent of that feeling. What is the purpose of it? What is the supposed purposeful effect on the other person? What is their likely response? Do we really want that? If this were the last day of our life, would that really be what we wanted? Well, this is the last day of our life. Our old life, with all its conflicts, anxiety, and fear. That is the price we have paid for holding on to the old. As we relinquish the negative, suppressed feelings from all the programs we have internalized, they are automatically replaced by the higher ones. We become happier and lighter, and so do the people around us. Let's review what these higher feelings are and what effect they have on the other person's feelings and behavior in response to us. Positive feelings. The higher feelings of courage, willingness, confidence, capability, can-do, zest, humor, competence, self-sufficiency, and creativity have an emotional purpose, effective actions, operation, and accomplishment. The reaction of other persons will reflect back to us cooperation, courage, respect, and a willingness to be with us. Additionally, because we increase their self-esteem, they seek our company. As we look at all of this, we see that there is a wonderful payoff in return for our willingness to let go of the negative feelings that stand in the way of these higher feelings, which effortlessly accomplish our real goals and purpose. When we are operating on the level of acceptance, enjoyment, warmth, gentleness, softness, trustingness, inner truth, and faith, the emotional purposes to which the other person responds are those of love, enjoyment, pleasure, harmony, peacefulness, understanding, and sharing. Their reaction to us will be one of acceptance, satisfaction, feeling in tune, feeling understood, and joy. They will automatically return our love. It is rather obvious that these reciprocal feelings bring about success in whatever the venture may be with the other person, whether it is vocational, social, personal, or a simple everyday business interaction. Connectedness. When our inner feelings are of peacefulness, serenity, tranquility, stillness, openness, and simplicity, the effect on other persons is to increase their awareness along with our own, and to give them a greater sense of freedom, perfection, unity, and at oneness with ourselves. In their relationship with us, they will feel joined. They will identify with us. They will understand at a deep level, and they will feel in communion with us. As a consequence, they will seek our presence, because in it they feel complete, recognized, and contented. They will experience an increased awareness of their own real self. They will feel higher in our presence, or when they think of us. Their response back to us will be that of love and gratitude for the blessing of our presence. In such a relationship, goals are automatically and effortlessly accomplished. Because we are not holding negativity, there is nothing we wish to hide from the other person. And this openness allows the other person to drop all defenses. Nothing is hidden out of guilt or fear, and there is a very conscious psychic connectedness. It is on this level that so-called telepathic phenomena occur with regularity. When we are in total harmony with another person, there is no desire on our part to withhold or guard any thoughts or feelings. Because the other person responds similarly, there is an effortless knowing of what is crossing the other person's mind and what their passing feeling states may be. There is a total acceptance of our own humanness and that of the other. If we are really in tune with others, we forgive them when we see a passing jealousy or reactivity. We realize it is only natural. And we know that they, in return, are aware of our passing resentment. Yet, they are overlooking it. They accept our humanness and they understand the situation. They know us so well that they recognize the likelihood of a passing resentment in certain situations. But they know also that we are going to let it go. The people with whom we share a relationship of loving acceptance are okay with our humanness and their own. No matter the surface emotions, we remain aware of the shared alignment to love, acceptance, and harmony with each other and the world. This level of communication actually can be reached with anyone. It does not have to be someone with whom we are intimately associated. Very often, we experience it first with our friends, with whom there is less at stake than intimate family members. Another situation where it often occurs in the course of an average life is with an ex-lover. With this person to whom we have revealed so much, now that there is no longer anything romantic at stake, a friendship might develop in which it is no longer necessary to hide anything. There can be truly open communication, honesty, and integrity. We see this not infrequently in couples that have separated or divorced. Once the turmoil has settled down, they get along easily and may even remain the best of friends for many years. Effect of positive feelings. It is obvious that higher states of consciousness have a profound effect on our relationships, because one of the laws of consciousness is like goes to like. Our inner states are actually radiated to others. We can positively affect others even when we are not physically with them. Feelings are energy, and all energy gives off a vibration. We are like sending and receiving stations. The less negativity we are holding, the more aware we can be of what others are really holding about us. The more we love, the more we find ourselves surrounded by love. the replacement of a negative feeling by a higher one accounts for the many miracles one can experience in the course of life. These become more frequent as one continues to surrender. As we surrender, life becomes more and more effortless. There is a constant increase in happiness and pleasure, which requires less and less from the outer world to be experienced. There is a diminution of needs and expectations of others. We stop looking out there for what we now experience as coming from within ourselves. We let go of the illusion that others are the source of our happiness. Instead of looking to get from others, we now look to give. Others now seek to be with us instead of avoiding us. In Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, Scrooge experienced the pleasure of giving instead of looking to get from others. The joy of that transformation is available to us all. Carl Jung wrote of the phenomenon called synchronicity, which might also have been called simultaneity, to explain the occurrence of events that to the intellect appear unrelated. As we surrender more and more, this type of experience becomes commonplace. An illustration of this phenomenon is the following experience related by a business executive who had been practicing the letting-go technique for about a year. "I was president of a small corporation with about 50 employees. We had built up a promising young man to head one of the divisions of the company. It turned out, however, that this man was very immature. Instead of responding with gratitude and cooperation for all that was done for him, he reacted by becoming grandiose, demanding, and somewhat paranoid. He declared that he was going to barge into the next board of directors meeting and cause a big upset with his wild accusations and demands. Although all of his accusations could have been easily refuted, the whole affair sounded like a dreadful experience to live through. For days, he appeared just plain hateful with his threats. The day of the board meeting, which was to be at 1 p.m., I was driving along the parkway thinking angry thoughts about him. Suddenly, I let it all go. I surrendered on him totally. I started to see the frightened child in him, and I started to send him love. All of my anxiety disappeared, and I felt a sympathetic love for him. I looked at my watch, and it was 12:30 p.m. When I got to the office, my secretary said that this man had walked into the office and stated that he was calling off the whole thing. He had changed his mind at the last minute. I asked her what time he had walked into the office. She said she had made particular note of the time, as the board meeting was soon to take place. She looked at her watch when he had made his announcement about his change of heart. The time was exactly 12:32 p.m. Letting go of expectations. When we put pressure on other people in order to get what we want, they automatically resist because we are trying to pressure them. The harder we push, the harder they resist. Even though, out of fear, they may actually concede to our demands, there is not an inner acceptance, and later on, we will lose what we have gained. This resistance is in all of us. We can be aware of it as it operates unconsciously, and we evade that awareness by making excuses and plausible explanations. As mentioned in an earlier chapter, in his book, Winning Through Intimidation, Robert Ringer called it the boy-girl theory. Boy meets girl. As soon as she realizes he wants her, she becomes hard to get. So then if boy decides to withdraw, she now wants him, and he in return acts aloof. When we refer to this phenomenon to explain sales resistance, one way around it is to take the view that our responsibility is to make an effort, but not try to determine the result. Another way is to surrender the feelings we have about what we want from the other person and let go of the pressures we are putting on them in the form of expectation and desire. They, then, have the psychic space to become agreeable or even to initiate the desired result on their own. the result we had wished for in the first place. An example of this dynamic is a man who was working with the letting go technique in the midst of a divorce. He and his wife got into a heated argument over something he wanted. She just kept saying no to his request. So in the middle of it, he surrendered on the object that he wanted. It was now okay with him if she didn't give it to him, and it was okay if she did. The instant he let go of it, in his mind, she suddenly turned to him and offered not only to give it to him, but to have it packed and shipped as well. This illustrates a very simple but decidedly elegant and active way of clarifying relationships. First, look at how you are secretly feeling about a person in a given situation. Presume that the other person is aware of those thoughts and feelings. Then, put yourself in their place and see how you would react. You will see that their behavior is probably just what you would have done in their place. The goal is to let go of all those feelings until you can go up to a positive thinking feeling space about the matter. Once in a positive space, now see how you would react as the other person who was aware of these new feelings. The likelihood is that their behavior will change, just as you would expect. There may be a time delay, but if you keep watching, the change will likely take place. Even if it doesn't, you will no longer be upset about the situation. Sometimes the payoff refuses to show up, but we can say, "This is one that the universe owed me in due time." In fact, it is a part of greatness to know that sometimes a good deed is not returned. The influence that our thoughts and feelings have is, in the world's literature, called the law of karma, or you get what you give, or you reap what you sow. Often, we don't see this law in operation because of the time delay. For instance, an acquaintance borrowed $200 and then failed to pay it back as promised. For over a year, there was a resentment and consequent avoidance of the person because of the emotional discomfort, which was compounded by the guilt at holding the resentment in the first place. Finally, when it became apparent that the only person suffering from the resentment was the person holding it, and that it was costing peace of mind, the willingness to let it go emerged. At that point, the resentment was fairly easy to let go, and the borrower was forgiven. The $200 was recontextualized as a loan to someone who had been in need. Within a few months, there was an unexpected encounter with the person who said out of the blue, "I have been concerned about the money I owe you. Here's the whole $200. The loan was repaid without even asking for it. We block receiving what we want from others by our expectations or resentments of them. It is very effective to surrender our expectations of others before we enter into a particular situation with them. Emotions are really subtle attempts to force others and impose our will on them, which they unconsciously resist. The way to facilitate satisfaction in relationships is lovingly to picture the best possible outcome. Make sure it is mutually beneficial, a win-win situation. Let go of all the negative feelings and merely hold the picture in mind. We can tell if we are really surrendered when we feel okay either way. It's okay with us if it happens, and it's okay with us if it doesn't. Therefore, to be surrendered does not mean to be passive. It is being active in a positive way. When we are surrendered, there is no longer the pressure of time. Frustration comes from wanting a thing now instead of letting it happen naturally in its own time. Patience is an automatic side effect of letting go, and we know how easy it is to get along with patient people. Notice that patient people usually get what they want in the end. One resistance to letting go is the illusion that if we let go of our wantingness and our expectations, we won't get what we want. We fear that we will lose it if we don't keep pressuring for it. The mind has the idea that the way to get a thing is to want it. Actually, if we examine the issue, we will see that events are due to decisions, and choices are based on our intentions. What we get is the result of these choices, even though they are unconscious, rather than what we think we want. When we surrender the pressure of wantingness, we are clear to make wiser choices and decisions. We think that our happiness depends on controlling events and that facts are what upset us. Actually, it is our feelings and thoughts about these facts that are the real cause of our upset. Facts, in and of themselves, are neutral things. The power we give them is due to our attitude of acceptance or non-acceptance and our overall feeling state. If we get stuck in a feeling, it is because we still secretly believe that it will accomplish something for us. Sexual relations. Because of the wide availability of sexual material and opportunities for varied sexual experiences, most people nowadays consider themselves rather sexually liberated. This liberation is primarily intellectual and behavioral. There still exists a great deal of emotional and experiential limitation, as well as sensory restriction. All experience takes place within consciousness itself. Therefore, sexual experience, like any other, is determined by our overall level of awareness and inner freedom. The degree to which our sexual experience has been restricted becomes apparent the more we relinquish our feelings about it. When we are totally surrendered on sexuality, it is like adding a third dimension to what was before a two-dimensional experience. As one woman put it, "It's like I used to hear only violins, then a cello was added, and then a flute, and so on, so that now the experience is totally full and comprehensive." Besides the increased emotional pleasure of freedom of expression, letting go brings a change in the sensory experience itself. To most people, men especially, sexual excitation and orgasmic pleasure are primarily a genital sensation. As one gets freer, the locale of the orgasm begins to expand and spread to the whole pelvis and abdomen, the legs and arms, and eventually the whole body. Often, after this accomplishment, there is a plateau that follows, and then suddenly and unexpectedly, the orgasmic location expands beyond the body, as though the space around the body was having the orgasm instead of the person. Ultimately, there is no limitation of the orgasm. It seems to expand into infinity and be experienced from no particular center or locale. It is as if there is no individual person present. The orgasm is experiencing itself. This expansion is facilitated by becoming aware that the facial grimacing and breath-holding are restrictions due to fear of loss of control and attempts to limit the experience. If one breathes slowly and deeply, smiling instead of grimacing, the fear will become conscious and can be surrendered. Sexuality loses its compulsiveness. Freedom means not just freedom to indulge, but freedom not to have sex or orgasm. When we are surrendered, we are not run by the desire for the orgasm. This unleashes creative experiencing and awareness because the mind is not focused on the orgasm itself. To be free from the domination of the desire for orgasm allows sexual experiences that have been described in spiritual literature as tantric sex. Most Westerners read a little about it, and perhaps give it a try, but then they give up because they approach it in a way that leads to suppression rather than to greater freedom. The more truly liberated we become, the more we are motivated by lovingness rather than by desire for gratification. This change of motivation from wanting and hunger to the mutual sharing of pleasure and happiness brings about major changes in the nature of sexual relationships. The intimacy with another person becomes more encompassing and pleasurable. There is greater attunement to the other person's sexuality and intuitive fulfillment of each other's styles of satisfaction. One couple expressed it as follows. It is as though we just witness what our bodies are doing. It is as though we are the space in which it is all happening. As soon as one person has a desire or fantasy, the other automatically and without even thinking moves into the acting out of fulfilling it. It is as though there is a psychic connection. There is an acknowledgement of the inner feelings about the fantasies and a letting go of how the other person might react. There is greater variation and frequency with sexuality also. It used to be mainly Friday and Saturday nights. Now making love may happen for days at a time, or sometimes weeks go by without it. It is always new. It is never the same. Amazingly, it just keeps getting better and better. Each orgasm seems better than the last, yet often the lovemaking is so enjoyable that there is no bother to have an orgasm. If it happens, it's okay. And it's okay if it doesn't. The intimate time spent together is satisfying and freeing, regardless of any end result. Another man said, I never really realized before how much sex ran my relationships. It was really compulsive. I was always afraid I would miss out on a sexual opportunity. I didn't want to miss out on the opportunity for pleasure. Now, my pattern is more variable. In fact, now I have no pattern. When it happens, and it's great when it does. When it doesn't, I don't even think about it. I used to have sex on my mind all the time. Women would usually say no, but now that I really don't care that much about it, they usually either suggest it or say yes if I ask. Now I find that I am more concerned about them instead of myself. Before, I was really just using them for my own selfish ends, and intuitively, the women knew it. Now I feel a lot of love for them. I really care about their welfare and happiness, even if it's only a single encounter. What a relief not to have to lie anymore. From the above examples, it is clear that there is a change in consciousness from lack to abundance. When we are self-centered and focused on getting emotional or physical pleasure from sex with another person, then we feel angry, frustrated, and deprived. The more loving we become, the more we receive what others are giving us, and we discover that we are all surrounded by love and opportunities for loving involvements all of the time. This was the case for one woman who shared the following experience. I was always overweight and not very good looking. All through my life, I rejected myself. I envied and hated sexually attractive women. I got to hate men, too, because they avoided me. I was full of self-pity. I even tried psychotherapy, but I quit when it became apparent that the psychotherapist seemed more interested in his attractive young women patients than he was in me. I tried various self-help methods, and at least got over my self-pity and depression. I was able to get a better job, but men still weren't interested in me, and I was unsuccessful in the sexual and relational arenas. Using the mechanism of letting go, she went into all the negative emotions that she had about herself and intimacy. She allowed the feelings to come up one by one, and she let them go. She let go of feelings like wanting attention and acceptance from others, fear of expressing herself, fear of being rejected, and even the fear of being deeply loved. There was the underlying feeling, I don't deserve love. Who could possibly love me? Within a week of surrendering these feelings, she had a date. She explained, I was so excited that I even lost my appetite. We had a great time, and then all of a sudden, I saw the secret. I was giving love instead of looking for it. My whole life has changed now. Instead of feeling desperate to get attention and love, I know I have the power to give it. When I enter a room, I see all the lonely, love-starved men. They look just the way I used to. So I know what it is they are feeling, and what to say to them, and how to express myself. I put myself in their place and watched their hearts melt. I used to scare them away because I was so hungry. Get that? Hungry. That was my problem. Now I feel full, and I share that fullness and what I have learned. My social life has become so enjoyable that I don't have time to eat anymore. I have lost 35 pounds in a year. I never even dieted. I just lost interest. I guess it is because I am getting gratified in a way now that really means something to me. Maybe I am a little wild with the newness of it, but I'll settle down before long. There is one man I'm really interested in now. Sexuality, then, reflects our overall state of consciousness. As we let go of fear and limitations, that area of our life expands and becomes ever more gratifying, and yet not necessary for happiness. Freedom and creativity replace compulsiveness and limitation. Sex becomes another avenue for greater expression and increasing awareness. The pleasure of communion and nonverbal understanding replaces the former self-centered drivenness for relief from tension and the limited goal of sexual pleasure and ego inflation. The secret, as the woman above stated, is in the awareness that when we seek to give instead of to get, all of our own needs are automatically fulfilled. As one person remarked, I have heard about many personal problems from my friends who practice this technique, but lack of lovers isn't one of them. Chapter 19. Achievement of Vocational Goals. Feelings and Abilities. Our thoughts determine the extent to which we manifest our talents and abilities, and they set the quality and quantity of our successes and failures. But what is it that determines and influences the direction of our thoughts? As we have seen, it is our feelings that determine and produce the kind of thinking that will lead us to success or failure in any endeavor. Feelings are the key to the expansion or constriction of our talents, abilities, and actions. Generally, we are knowledgeable and well-trained in matters pertaining to the outer world, yet we are sometimes unknowledgeable and untrained in the inner world, the world of feelings. Because feelings determine thoughts, and the thoughts we hold in mind determine outcomes, it is important to clarify the relationship between our feelings and the freeing of our abilities so that they result in successful action. To summarize what we have said about the scale of consciousness, and to make it simple, we can briefly categorize all feelings as either negative or positive, and, of course, the thoughts that will result from them will be either negative or positive. Negative feelings related to work. These feelings are always unpleasant and range from mildly uncomfortable to painful. They instigate the process of thinking and ideation that leads to I can't and we can't, regardless of the event, situation, or problem in which the person is involved. Negative feelings arise when we dislike what we see, hear, think, or remember. Our reaction to disliking comes in the form of such feelings as anger, grief, and anxiety. Our usual way of dealing with unpleasant feelings is to suppress them, and because of this, we assume that these feelings are part and parcel of our thinking process. This error results because the feelings of dislike are being processed through our thoughts. Suppressing these feelings does not make them disappear. On the contrary, they will reemerge as negative thoughts. Negativity does not exist within a situation or event. Rather, it resides in our reaction to the situation as we see it. When negative feelings are acknowledged and relinquished, the situation can rapidly change in appearance from impossible to easily manageable, workable, and even quite useful. One of the most prominent negative feelings that blocks success in professional life is that of envy. The underlying dynamic of envy is that when we see someone else getting ahead, this triggers our own sense of insecurity. It's not simply that we see the other person's achievement and feel envy. Rather, the other person's achievement triggers in us a feeling of lack or inadequacy about ourselves. It triggers the feeling, maybe I'm not accomplishing what I should be accomplishing, or maybe I won't be able to accomplish what I want to accomplish, or maybe my accomplishments aren't appreciated by others and go unnoticed. Envy is painful because it arouses our own sense of inadequacy, and then we often resent the person whose successes have inadvertently provoked this feeling. Unconsciously, this resentment fuels our endless desire for strokes, which, of course, do not come our way because our wantingness repels the very thing we want. As the cycle progresses, we feel increasingly dissatisfied and unhappy in our job and alienated from our colleagues. There may be the belief, everyone is against me. Our family members may grow weary of our constant complaints about the situation at work. We may seek escape at the end of the day through endless television or overindulgence in food, sleep, drugs, and alcohol. What's the way out of this cycle of envy and dissatisfaction? As we've said before, the answer is to go within. With envy, we are constantly looking at others, evaluating their accomplishments, and comparing ourselves to them. We see the cost of this looking outward in the film Chariots of Fire, when one of the runners turned to see where his opponent was in the race. The moment he took his eye off the finish line to compare himself with another runner, he lost that split second which cost him the whole race. The man who won the race was motivated by the sheer love of running and to do his best. He didn't run to beat another. He didn't compare himself to other runners. He ran his best because he loved to run. When we look within ourselves, we see what the underlying feelings are that prevent our success: competitiveness, self-doubt, insecurity, inadequacy, and desire for approval. Are we willing to look at these feelings? Once our feelings are recognized, it becomes obvious to us that they work against us. They drain our efforts and impede our success in the world. Our self-doubts block the very recognition we seek. Once we see the cost of negative feelings to our happiness and success, we will become willing to let go of them and the payoffs we get from them. For example, we become willing to let go of the cheap little satisfaction we get from blaming others for our lack of success. We become willing to let go of the sympathy we garner from those who listen to our complaints. When we let go of our feelings of inadequacy, we will find that envy of others disappears. We become like the winning runner in Chariots of Fire, who loves what he does, delights in his success and that of others, and has boundless energy to excel in the world. Positive feelings related to work. These are always felt as pleasant, and include such feelings as joy, happiness, and security. They instigate a process of thinking and ideation that is exemplified by the thoughts, I can, and we can, regardless of the event, situation, or problem in which the person is involved. Positive feelings flow naturally when negative feelings are not in action. Nothing needs to be done to acquire positive feelings, as they are part and parcel of our natural state. This positive inner state is always there, and it is merely covered over by suppressed negative feelings. When the clouds are removed, the sun shines forth. The freeing up of abilities, creative ideas, talents, and resourcefulness occurs automatically as a result of the positive state of mind that ensues when the negative aspects have been surrendered. Letting go of negativity frees up inspiration to create an endless flow of creative ideas. For example, there was the case of a producer of an award-winning Broadway musical who attributed the success of the hit show to the letting go of negative feelings through the mechanism of surrender. There have been writers, artists, and musicians who came into a sudden breakthrough of inspiration as soon as a negative belief or self-limitation was recognized and surrendered. The same experience has been recounted by scientists who suddenly just knew the formula that would cure a disease. It is as if the energy field of creative genius is available and waiting for us as soon as we surrender the clouds of negativity that prevent its revelation to us. Feelings and the decision-making process. We can simplify the levels of consciousness into three major states: inert, energetic, and peaceful. These three states are related to the decision-making process. The first state, inertia, is reflective of the emotional levels of apathy, grief, and fear. The nature of these feelings is to interfere with our concentration on the situation at hand and engage us instead in concentration on our own thoughts, most of which are in the realm of, I don't know, I'm not sure, and I don't think I can. This successive concentration of our own uselessly cycling thoughts renders us temporarily unable to perceive the full dimension and possibilities of the overall situation at hand. While these negative thoughts and feelings are flowing, it is difficult for us to arrive at any decision. Sometimes we opt to stall the decision until we feel better. At other times, we proceed to arrive at a decision that we think will answer our questions or take care of a situation. Unfortunately, the decision that results is not sustainable in the long run because it is based on the feeling state, and when the feeling state changes, the decision has to be changed with it. This leads to inner insecurity, ambivalence, confusion, and a loss of confidence in us by those around us. In the computer language of garbage in and garbage out, the negative feeling state is the garbage in, and the decisions that come out of it must be on the same level. The second state, which is higher than inertia, is that of being energetic. The emotions underlying this state are those of desire, anger, and pride. The nature of these feelings is to interfere less with concentration than the previous lower state, because some positive thoughts are allowed to flow through and mix with the negative feelings. This is the state of the go-getter. Although things are accomplished, there is unevenness of performance because of the mixture of positive and negative thoughts and ideas. Negative feelings such as ambition, desire, or proving oneself tend to drive the go-getter, and at times the decision-making is compulsive or impulsive. Characteristic of this level of consciousness is personal self-gain as the primary motivating factor. Therefore, many of the decisions are unsustainable because they are based on a win-lose situation rather than on a win-win situation. A win-win decision would have occurred had the feelings and welfare of the other persons involved in the situation been taken into account. Using language relating to the body's energy centers, we say that people on this level are motivated by their solar plexus, third chakra. This means that they seek to attain success and to master the world. But they are self-centered and driven by personal motives, with little concern for the welfare of others or of the world in general. Because their decisions benefit primarily themselves, their success is limited to personal gain. Any benefit to the world is purely secondary, and the results, therefore, fall far short of greatness. The third and highest level is the peaceful state, based upon the feelings of courage, acceptance, and love. Because these feelings are purely positive and non-disturbing by their very nature, they allow us to concentrate completely on the situation and observe all of the relevant details. Because of an inner state of peace, inspiration brings forth ideas that solve the problem. In this state, the mind is free of worry, and its ability to communicate and concentrate is unimpeded. From this state come solutions to problems that are placed in a win-win context, because everyone benefits. Everyone lends their energy to the project, and success is shared by all. This approach not infrequently leads to greatness. It characterizes the noble projects that bring about far-reaching improvements in our society. On this level, we discover that when everyone's needs in a situation are met, our own needs are fulfilled automatically. The unimpeded creative mind will work out a solution where everyone gains and no one loses. If we look at a situation and claim that a win-win solution is not possible, that should warn us that we have some unsurrendered inner feelings blocking a possibly perfect solution. We need to remember the dictum that the impossible becomes possible as soon as we are totally surrendered to the situation. Feelings and sales ability. Inasmuch as selling is a part of many vocations, involving either a product or ideas or our personal services, it is rewarding to look at the relationship between these three basic levels of consciousness and sales ability itself. The lowest, or inertia state, is governed by feelings of apathy, grief, and fear. It is obvious that sales ability is at its lowest. Salespersons in this state are often told by prospects that they are not interested in the product right now. This leads immediately to negative thinking and self-criticism with thoughts such as, they don't want my product. The very nature of sales activity exposes salespersons to rejection and disappointment. They may temporarily escape these feelings by taking coffee breaks or indulging in personal conversation with other employees. However, their feelings have impaired their concentration and diminished their ability to produce resourceful ideas. The low self-esteem creates vulnerability to discouragement, which in turn creates expectations of failure. When thoughts of failure are held in mind, failure is precipitated in the sales situation. At this point, by acknowledging the negative feelings and letting go of the payoff from each of them, a person can evolve to the next level. The next level, the energetic state, is based on feelings of desire, anger, and pride. It includes a greater degree of vigor and drive. This facilitates better concentration on the work goal. However, because the feelings are somewhat driven, there may be excessive verbalization, with more time spent talking to sales prospects than listening to them. This may typically lead to premature closings, pushing too hard, and creating marketing problems. Nonetheless, achievement of sales goals is possible on this level because of the higher energies invoked. One block to success on this level is the focus on self-gain and the underlying viewpoint, I win, they lose. This self-seeking motive is intuitively picked up by sales prospects and may lead to resistance. The thoughts characteristic of this level are along the lines of, I want to get them to buy it, so I'll get a good commission. On the highest or peaceful level, based upon the feelings of courage, acceptance, and love, our ability to concentrate is at its highest. Salespeople on this level are able to listen carefully to the other person and place the sale in a context of what is beneficial to the buyer rather than to the seller. Because the mind is peaceful and creative, they are never at a loss for creative ideas as to what will produce sales or what will turn problems into solutions. The person on this level often converts customers to friends, and the customers tend to become loyal. Achievement of sales goals on this level is assured, because what is being held in mind is the positive situation of win-win, and the inner certainty that a win-win solution can be created in the situation. Often, surrendering to what appears to be an impossible situation quickly turns into a positive experience. This is exemplified by the case of someone who had been working in an art gallery. Sales were slow. She hadn't made a sale in weeks. She tried a number of consciousness techniques with herself and worked very hard at it. She utilized visualization, positive thinking, advanced sales techniques, and written affirmations. However, nothing came of it. Her frustration mounted progressively, with the accompanying feeling, I can't. Finally, in desperation, she just let go completely and surrendered all of her pent-up feelings. Inside of herself, she suddenly felt free of all the efforting, trying, and striving. The inner tension disappeared, and instead, she felt at peace as she went to work that morning at the gallery. Within the first hour at work, she sold 2 copies of a sculpture, which, interestingly enough, was titled Letting Go. Executives of a number of companies have documented similar breakthroughs. For instance, a partner in one of the country's most prestigious accounting firms, after experiencing success with inner surrender, eventually left the firm in order to share with others what he considered to be the most beneficial thing he had encountered in his life. He wanted to introduce the approach to a number of large corporations. He studied the outcome at one of the largest insurance companies in America. His study found that within 6 months of learning the technique, the insurance agent's sales increased by 33% over a control group. He concluded that success in the world is related to our ability to concentrate, which means the ability to keep our attention on one thing at a time without interference of other thoughts or feelings. A mind that is concentrated on a positive thought has the power to increase the likelihood that the positive thought will materialize in the world of events. The most successful people in the world are those who hold in mind the highest good of all concerned, including themselves. They know that there is a win-win solution to every problem. They are at peace with themselves, which allows them to be supportive of the potential and success of others. They do work which they love, and so they feel continually inspired and creative. They do not seek happiness. They have discovered that happiness is a byproduct of doing what they love. A feeling of personal fulfillment comes naturally from their positive contribution to the lives of others, including family, friends, groups, and the world at large. Chapter 20. Physician, Heal Thyself. By popular request, the personal experience of self-healing has been shared many times at lectures, talks, and workshops. Everyone seems to want to hear the story over and over again of how a physician was healed of many diseases. Therefore, this chapter will relate the highlights of recovery and healing, because they illustrate in detail just how the principles and techniques we have been talking about actually work at the pragmatic level. Lived experience and clinical observation confirm that the majority of human disorders are susceptible to being cured by following certain principles. Many diseases can be reversed unless there is a strong karmic dominance to the contrary. Paradoxically, those serious cases, where all hope has been given up, often respond promptly and give the best results. This is perhaps because the person has finally let go and is now sweetly reasonable. They are ready for what Thomas Kuhn calls a paradigm shift, that is, a willingness to see things differently from an expanded perspective and to be open-minded. Sometimes it takes chronic sickness, suffering, pain, and a confrontation with the fear of death before a person is willing to let go of cherished beliefs and open up to the truth of clinical reality. Basic principles. This chapter details the healing and recovery from a multitude of physical illnesses in the life of a physician. We will delineate the basic principles that facilitated the process of self-healing. In doing this, there will be a review of some of the material we have already covered, so as to bring it together into an integrated overall experience. We will start with the basic working concepts. A thought is a thing. It has energy and form. The mind, with its thoughts and feelings, controls the body. Therefore, to heal the body, thoughts and feelings need to be changed. What is held in mind tends to express itself through the body. The body is not the real self. It is like a puppet controlled by the mind. Beliefs that are unconscious can manifest as illness, even though there is no memory of the underlying beliefs. An illness tends to result from suppressed and repressed negative emotions, plus a thought that gives it a specific form, i.e., consciously or unconsciously, one particular illness is chosen rather than another. Thoughts are caused by suppressed and repressed feelings. When a feeling is let go, thousands or even millions of thoughts that were activated by that feeling disappear. Although a specific belief can be canceled and energy to it can be refused, it is generally a waste of time to try to change thinking itself. We surrender a feeling by allowing it to be there without condemning, judging, or resisting it. We simply look at it, observe it, and allow it to be felt without trying to modify it. With the willingness to relinquish a feeling, it will run out in due time. A strong feeling may recur, which means there is more of it to be recognized and surrendered. In order to surrender a feeling, sometimes it is necessary to start by relinquishing the feeling that is there about the particular emotion, e.g., guilt that I shouldn't have this feeling. In order to relinquish a feeling, sometimes it is necessary to acknowledge and let go of the underlying payoff of it, e.g., the thrill of anger and the juice of sympathy from being a helpless victim. Feelings are not the real self. Whereas feelings are programs that come and go, the real inner self always